Hi, everyone. Welcome to Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'm Langdon DeMint.
And I'm Julian Taylor.
And welcome to our podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Three Bald Guys Talking Safety. I'll sort of introduce it and say I'm joined by my normal shiny-headed friend, Langdon. Good to see you.
You as well. And it is an honor. We don't get to say this very often. Our guest is truly bald.
Our guest is truly bald. Yeah, we have asked people to shave. Looks like Mark is the first one who's acceded to the request and actually done it. But we're joined this afternoon by Mark Nixon, who is an ex-colleague, but has got some really interesting things to say. But I'll let you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your sort of background and journey into safety, which, as with most people, was not a deliberate and planned event.
No, not at all. Hi, everyone. I'm Mark Nixon from ARCO Professional Safety Services, which is the training and consultancy arm of the bigger ARCO business. And so my job role, as it stands, is Senior Occupational Health and Safety Trainer and Consultant, and also a Mental Health First Aid Instructor. Nationally on the adult mental health first aid course. But it started in health and safety for me. So I did straight out of school engineering apprenticeship. So I'm an apprentice trained engineer, so skilled in precision machine. And so then kind of worked my way up. And unfortunately, we had a number of fatalities. So two machine fatalities and a lung disease. So they needed someone to do health and safety. And that was me back in 1995. Been at ARCO now for 25 years and selling things for 10 years. And then when this part of the business was created, segued into this part of the business. So 15 years in this part of the business. But then 8 years ago, I accidentally helped a young lady not complete suicide, which was a genuine, not something I intended to do. I knew I was helping her. In some way, I know I was helping her in the area of kind of mental health, but I didn't know she was suicidal at the time. And so, yeah, I just thought, so I've kind of been to university to become a consultant. And when you do the legal part, the common law duty of care, aside from the statute law, asks what would a reasonable person do? So for me, it was just something that, for me, a reasonable person would do, saw someone struggling. And wanted to help. So yeah, that was my in, if you like. And it was just simply one of the most valuable life-affirming things I've ever done. And, you know, I've done a hell of a lot of safety training. So anyone that's had to do a safety course, people don't generally skip along to safety courses. They kind of endure them for the most part. But when you genuinely think that you've had an impact in someone's life, it's just such a nice thing. Feel honoured to be involved in the area of mental health.
And it's interesting, isn't it, Mark? Because I've known you a long time. I've known you for all of those 25 years. If you think about it, we've always talked about working in health and safety, but actually what we've done most of the time is worked in safety, haven't we? Do you see that there is a shift happening, that actually businesses are seeing the health side as something that is more important or is becoming more important?
Yeah, and so definitely, especially during the pandemic, which I don't think would surprise anybody. And I think the health and safety executive have helped that along the way. They have generally three what we call topics of interest, and they being respiratory and musculoskeletal for the most part, just because they're the two biggest problems generally in health and safety. But then more recently, they've kind of started to focus upon stress. So I think a lot of companies, especially bigger companies, companies with, corporate and social responsibility aspects to them, start to focus upon this. And I think the pandemic just helped that along the way, because the pandemic didn't care who you were, how big your BMW was, how posh your suit was. You know, it really didn't. So we all had to do the work at home, and we were all affected by that. And, you know, suddenly it became very apparent that if you didn't look after your health and well-being and your mental health during that time, you really did suffer. So I think that really helped businesses kind of just refocus on something that's, as you've already said, the Health and Safety at Work Act has always been there. So the health part of health and safety has always been there. And, you know, as I comment, it's actually the health and safety at work, not the safety and health. And mental health is just the biggest part of all health, because if you don't have mental health, you just don't have health. It's as simple as that.
And, you know, it seems like it's been a... I think about my early after I got my master's, went to work at UL, and we had, you know, global company. Health and safety was vital. I worked with a lot of organizations, but something I feel like we always realized was health and safety and you're alluding to it perfectly, to be one, really they were, everyone, I'm showing my hands out, they were parallel to one. Sometimes they would mesh, sometimes they would pull apart. And it seems like it's a challenge to, especially here in the States, COVID, I think, helped. Well, it exacerbated some of the issues, and then it's helped try to bring the health side. But we have really, I feel like, a lot of times gone back to the way things were before. If it's a health effect health adverse effect that correlates to something from work, okay, seems like people, you know, obviously put more into that focus. But if it is something that is outside of work that correlates to the job, that's still a challenge. I feel like the younger generation is more prone to that, but some of the older, we still see a very big challenge of, well, what happens to me at home is my business. What's going on? I try to handle it myself. And I'm curious, are you doing much? What are thoughts kind of around how we can bridge that better? Jules and I talk it all the time. We don't have any answers. So there's that.
So I think it's, I don't think it's at all. It's, there was a review done by the Health and Safety Executive called it Stephen Farmer Review. Apparently they're supposed to do it in alphabetical order, so apparently it should be the Farmer Stevens Review, but it just sounds better. Everyone calls it the Stevenson Farmer Review. And so what that sets out, and for any listeners, I thoroughly recommend, it's a very underrated, and I think under, referred to, study. And what it sets out is two sets of strategies. And so it sets out a core strategies for the business, and then it sets out what we call enhanced strategies for larger businesses. And what that is it sets out for the businesses what they should be doing, to basically, for the business to fully integrate that into the business. So that's, I think that's the first thing that I would say there. And like anything else, whether it's a near miss reporting system, you know, whether it's an occupational health, scheme, it really must come top down, and it must be communicated by the business. If, you know, so many businesses, I walk into businesses, and I'll ask them if they have, let's say, an employee assistance program, and the majority of employees don't know. And I will walk into their canteen, I will find a notice board, and I will find a leaflet on the notice board, and they don't know it's there. And it's, so I think for me, one of the key things is that communication of what's there already, rather than having to reinvent things or create things from scratch, is actually to publicize what's there. And I think that is such a failure on many businesses to do that. So I think that's just you know, one of the things. And then the other aspect of this, which is huge, which is, you know, why this thing is just sort of trying to point to that there. There we go. This little thing at the side of me here, which I'll kind of read out, is the person's manager. And so when people self-report, that they have a good relationship with their manager. They have A, less time off work. B, if they are off work through mental ill health, then they'll come back to work sooner and more recovered, and they'll have less instances of mental ill health absence. But if that person doesn't report they have a good relationship with their manager, then the opposite is true, in essence. So just the simple human relationship with the person's manager is absolutely key. It's such a big part. And again, I think when the pandemic occurred within our business, within Arco, as Julian will know, it's a completely sales-driven organization. And we used to seesaw between what's more important this year. Is it the turnover or is it the profit? And it was always kind of chopped and changed. But then when the pandemic happened, the focus, and not just the focus, but the message from on high was worry less about the profit and worry more about the person. Because if the person's not okay, then it's all kind of downhill from there. And so again, it was that sort of message from on high that the person's really, really important. And so there are an absolute sort of so many different avenues into this. How can we integrate, the work aspect with the home aspect? Because at the end of the day, what I do outside of work, so, some people are going through a divorce, some people are losing loved ones, some people are suffering financially. Again, the old thing was, well, that's your problem. as you've referred to there, Langdon. Whereas I think we all recognise now that, well, that is going to affect them. Having done a lot of work with very safety critical companies, particularly large power companies, you've got people in what we call man baskets hanging from a pylon. And if that person is depressed, that person is not thinking straight. It's as simple as that. If a person did have severe anxiety, they probably wouldn't be up there. Or if they are covering up, then they may well be. And then you've got the stress, pure stress on its own, which basically cuts off blood supply to the thinking brain where we make our decisions. And so you've then got somebody who's potentially making a bad decision. So the link between, proper health and safety and mental health, is, again, it's very under sort of noticed, if you like, if that's a word. People sort of like think it's another thing that we haven't quite got round to yet. This mental health thing, it's over there and it doesn't affect, the health and safety aspects, but it completely does.
I was going to say the two things absolutely correlate, don't they, Mark? I mean, if you do a proper root cause analysis at the end after an incident, I would think in many cases you could get back to a point of actually somebody being not completely focused or not properly focused because of things that are going on in their private lives. I know Jason Anker, who we've talked to before, and Jason absolutely says part of the root cause of his incident was that he was going through a relationship breakup. He was distracted. He wasn't sleeping properly. He was probably drinking too much. And then he's got to work and he's working up at height. And one of the causes of his accident, other than trying to do something late on in the evening or late on in the shift because he thought he had to get it done before the end of shift, was that actually he wasn't focused properly. So there's absolutely that correlation, isn't there, between mental health and safety. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I think, again, businesses have a responsibility, don't they, Mark? And I think it's interesting. I was doing I did a webinar yesterday. I was talking about psychological safety. And excuse my language. I said, let's cut the bullshit terms out here and actually let's talk about what it really is, which is actually creating a safe working environment, isn't it? It's about creating a safe working environment where people are prepared or comfortable to put their hands up and talk about things or say, I've got a problem. And I think on the point where you were going with work-related stress, I think that's definitely hitting into the area of a duty of care from an employer, isn't it, to say, actually, how are we contributing to this and how do we change that? And it's almost slow down to go quicker. Some people often talk about that phrase, don't they? Slow down to go quicker. Actually helping somebody out and helping them to slow down probably turns them back into a productive person again, rather than just letting them almost fall off the end and not come back again.
Yeah, so that reminds me of, so I have a little, we all like an acronym, and you know, ARCO is no stranger to that. So yeah, which is RARRAH, so RARRAH. The two RAs there are, the first is risk assessment, and then on the back of that, a reasonable adjustment. So if I may, I'd like to talk about the risk assessment from a stress risk assessment perspective. Because if anybody, well, for the listeners, we're in this world of health and safety, so we know about risk assessment. And we've got the management regulations 1999, and then we've got the regulation 3 of the management regs, which says thou shalt conduct a suitable and sufficient assessment of the risk to health and safety. So that's the management regs. And a lot of failures, a lot of prosecutable offences in health and safety are what we call Reg 3 breaches, which is a failure to properly risk assess. A lot of people, and when I say a lot of people, the majority of companies really don't, they've not thought about this legal requirement to do that for stress. Because the standard we have for stress in health and safety is the stress management standards. I think published in 2003. So we've had those for, you know, a long time now, you know, 21 years. So we've had them for 20 years, but it's, again, one of the most under-referenced documents that probably is in health and safety. So, yes, we've got this legal requirement, not under the standards, not under the management standards, but under the management regulations to do a risk assessment. And so what makes, so some people say, well, you know, stress is subjective, you know, is it foreseeable? It's just such a simple answer to that. So if you look at the published information from the Health and Safety Executive, where they publish information on the fatality stats for the UK, and then the occupational ill health fatality stats for things like lung disease, which is about 13,000, the fatality stat for accidents is about 130, between 130 and 150. But in terms of occupational lost time, by far and above, it's stress, anxiety, depression, and the majority of that is stress. So it's quite simple. The Health and Safety Executive statistics alone allude to the fact that most people nowadays are off because of this topic. You can't pretend it's not foreseeable anymore because it's massively on the HSE's radar. Okay, so which means we have to do a risk assessment for stress. It's as simple as that. Not because I say so, because that's what a reasonable company would do, and that's where the common law duty of care sits. If you haven't done it, and it's clearly an issue, and they put a claim in, there's a good chance they'll win on the back of that. But we've got this legal requirement to do a suitable and sufficient assessment of the risks, and this is stress is a risk. So quite simply, we assess six things. So if it's a manual handling assessment, we will do TILE, task individual load environment, and I could keep going along all these different things you can assess and the criteria for them. And so it's six things for stress. The first, so I'll just kind of list them first of all. So we've got demands, support, control, change, role, and relationship. So these are the six things that we have to assess for stress when it becomes apparent. And I think what my brain was trying to do earlier on, and I lost my track for a moment, is if somebody is affected by something in their home life, then one of the best things you could do is a workplace stress risk assessment. Because again, if they're going through a messy divorce and, you know, other things around that, it's going to affect their work. And again, going back to the rah-rah, so we've got this risk assessment and then reasonable adjustments. In other words, the demands, so again, one of the key of those six, we've got the first one, which is the big one, which is the demands on the person due to work. And so what we have to do is ask the question, do we need to make a reasonable adjustment temporarily to the demands on that person because of what we know they're going through, even though it's got nothing to do with work. So that's the demands. And so we look at what have they got on their plate at work and then outside of work. We then look at the support. So Nick Cook, who was an ARCO safety manager, leading the health and safety in ARCO for a long time, alongside Joe Heselton, said a really nice, really good phrase, which I said I'll always remember that, which is, there's nothing wrong with high demand as long as we have high support. And so if you take things like, paramedics and A&E staff and firemen and police, they have a hell of a lot of demands. And so they support one another through that. And so we've got high demands, high support. So we've then got control and people who feel like they have control over the situation feel less stressed, with the same stress than people who feel like they cannot control that situation. And so control is a big, big factor. We've then got change. And as we know, the pandemic changed everything. Thankfully, most of it's changed back, thank God. Change is massive. So again, just in our business, we've been around since 1884 when we used to make tennis balls and sell you asbestos. We don't do those things anymore. So we've massively changed, and Julian will have seen God, the huge changes we've had over, 130 odd years. So it's inevitable. And I think that's one of the key things. People sometimes rail against it like it shouldn't be happening, but it's one of the guarantees in life. So it's always going to happen. So I think a better word is transition, which is change is going to happen. How is that transition done by the business, communicated, etc.? Last two, role. So I got a good term from, I'll not say that they're a big pharmaceutical, I'll leave it at that. And they've got this thing called role creep, which is, when you kind of looked at your job description and sort of, I used to remember when my job was that. And so, yeah, all these other things have come in without our permission, we've had no control, things have changed. And so that's called role creep. So I think just a simple comment on the role is, it needs to be a job person fit both ways. So the job needs to be right for you. And also we need to be right for the job. You get a mismatch in one of those directions, you're going to get stressed. And then lastly, relationships, which is, how are you getting on with people, your colleagues, the managers, the teams, the people below you, etc. So they are the six things we do in a stress risk assessment. We look at those six areas. And then what we can do is look at the specific aspects of those six which are causing an issue, and then ideally make reasonable adjustments, temporarily, ideally, until the person feels like they're starting to cope again. And then maybe we can get that person back up to 100%. And that's the way to do it. That's a stress risk assessment, done at work under the management regs. And I really, again, refer people to the stress management standards. It's a really good practical document.
And we're talking about this very much. This is kind of UK centric, but it applies anywhere, doesn't it? When you think about the sort of disciplines here, the things you're talking about, Mark, doesn't matter where you are, you can do those things. And I think, just talking from experience, because I've experienced mental health challenges, it can creep up on you and you're just not ready for it. I had a situation where I had a relative who was seriously ill. I had a car crash, various things just, it was like dominoes falling down all at the same time, and I absolutely cracked at the end of it. Those sort of adjustments that you talk about, I work for a great business, and they made those adjustments, and even something as simple as giving somebody the space to just get their head back together is just really, really powerful and really useful. I'm absolutely passionate about this because I've experienced it and I've seen other people experience it. I think I'm trying to remember when we first talked about this, you gave a really interesting stat because we were talking about fatalities, and actually the fatalities related to suicide and mental health blow everything out of the water, don't they?
So I think at the sort of last calendar year on fatalities, so it's normally around about 150 fatal accidents in the UK caused by work in an average year. So I think it's 135 at the minute, 134, 135. But for every one of those fatalities caused by an accident at work, there are, I use the figure 50, but I think it's, if you want to be accurate, I think that's 53. So there are 53 people who take their own life for every single one of those fatal accidents at work. And so the way I kind of get this across to businesses is to just say, you know, I mean, I don't sort of say this because I know it's unreasonable, but, you know, are we putting 50 times more effort into trying to stop suicides? Well, you know, I don't think that's realistic. It's maybe slightly naive. But somebody in any company is 50 times more likely to take their own life than they are to be involved in a workplace accident. And I think, you know, putting it that way really hits home. And so if we can identify somebody who's not doing well, and either because they're exhibiting some of these signs and symptoms, or we know what they're going through. And for me, that's where mental health first aid really has its strength. Because your normal kind of physical first aiders, who are kind of dealing with broken legs and cut fingers and, you know, usual sort of things, they are fundamentally reactive. Whereas a mental health first aider can be proactive, where we actually approach someone who we know is going through a tough time, or again, linking it back to safety, they've witnessed a serious accident. And so there's a, you know, there's, you know, and we've had the awful, we've had some awful things, you know, happen in the UK over the last sort of few days, where people have witnessed, absolutely awful events and are traumatized by that. So what we can do is we can actually reach out and say, look, this function is available. We have mental health first aiders available. And, we'll be looking out to see if anybody's showing early signs of being troubled. And again, making people aware of the facilities available for them, where they can go to talk to people. And I'm very open about my journey as well. I've been to counselling 3 times. And I've had a suicidal crisis myself. And so I'm very open about that. Why would you want to sort of brag about that? And it's purely because my experience now is when I'm open and when I put my heart on my sleeve, it almost gives other, particularly men, permission to do the same. I've had so many people approach me after I've given talks or any of these courses. And because I was able to be honest about my journey, it allows people to sort of do the same. And so, I'm a huge advocate of, again, not talking about things that you aren't comfortable talking about. One of the rules we have in mental health first aid is we have a thumbs up rule. And the thing there is, if you're not good, if you're leaving to go to the toilet, you pop your thumb up. I'm leaving the room because I'm just popping to the loo. And if you don't put your thumb up, then, you're not okay. And so that's why I always encourage people to make sure you put your thumb up just in case, because I will be following you to make sure you're all right. So we have a little joke about that. But for people not to share things that they're not comfortable sharing, but to share anything that they can. So me putting my heart on my sleeve, my experience is it allows other people to open up. And so I think an important thing here then is, okay, well, what about the people that don't? What about the people that won't? What about people who feel like they can't? And I think I'd really like to address that because, for the people that are going to come forward, then that's great. There's a good chance they'll get help. What about the people who are not saying anything? So just dealing with the obvious thing, which is you can't help everybody all the time, and that's something we have to acknowledge. And I know a lot of people who've gone into these roles to try and help people sometimes take it very personally because they didn't see signs, but it is not up to us to save the world. This is not a glib comment at all, but you can take a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. And so what I always encourage people to do is simply be able to look in the mirror and look in yourself and say, I tried to help that person and I tried to show them the avenues which they can go down. But everybody has to at some point, and I had to do this myself when I was in the midst of a deep depression. there was a turning point for me. And I remember that turning point very specifically. And what we have to do, particularly with, let's say, depressed people, we have to have what I call Olympic levels of patience with depressed people, because there's actually sort of a condition called learned helplessness, which is, so a chap called Martin Seligman. So I'm going to just pop, I don't know how this is going to go. It might work, it might not. So I have my little, this acronym here, which is PERMA. Okay. And PERMA was given to us by one of the global authorities on positive psychology, a chap called Martin Seligman, but he's actually an expert in depression.
So just for people who are listening, that's PERMA.
Yes, yeah? PERMA, yeah. Which I'll elaborate on.
Okay.
But basically, yeah, this guy that gave us PERMA is an expert psychologist, and he coined this phrase "learned helplessness," where people in depression learn almost like refuse help and stay stuck. And it seems like, you know, you would expect, you know, you walk in as a mental health first aider and people fall at your feet going, thank God Mark's here, you know. Whereas no, people in depression will stay stuck and they're not doing it on purpose much of the time. It's a condition. And so there's actually shrinkage, what we call atrophy, which is a shrinkage of a brain area called the hippocampus, which is mainly involved in memory, long-term memory, and that brain region actually shrinks with severe depression. And not all of that function and not all of that size actually returns. So severe depression actually destroys certain parts of the brain. Actually shrinks certain part of the brain. So when people are actually questioning, is depression real? Yeah, depression has a catastrophic effect on the brain. And so the reason for the detail there is this is a serious thing. And when somebody is in the midst of that, they may refuse help. So it's worth knowing that they might not be doing that on purpose. It's a condition of actual depression. And so what we need to be able to make sure is that we support that person and we have empathy for them. In other words, if we were in their shoes, how would we want to be treated? And when the time's right, they know how to get help. And all we can do is encourage. That's all we can do. And as long as we can, again, look for me, look in the mirror and know we've done that, sometimes that's as much as we can do. Just want to get back to stress then. So that's somebody, we've got somebody at work who's stressed. And again, they're not coming forward. They're not getting the help. I think it's important because at some point it may well tip over into safety critical. You know, if we're talking, you know, I'm a machinist and, you know, potentially I have the ability to operate, you know, some of the largest machines that we had. Because once you've got an idea of how machines work, they're very similar things. You know, they work along similar axes and generally they're rotating in kind of various directions. So once you know one machine, you can kind of get your head around them all. And yeah, so if we've got people working in things like work at height, confined spaces, machinery, working with serious chemicals, then it's in our own interests and in their interests, actually, that they actually are, if we identify when they are stressed, because if they are stressed, they will potentially not be thinking straight. So it's in the company's interest as well. Very simply, stressed people will do a less good job. And again, they'll have more time off. They'll be less productive, less effective. So the whole, whichever direction you look at this from, it's in the business's interest, the colleague's interests, a family interest, a personal interest that we actually reduce stress. But you know people who believe that they thrive on stress. So I'm going to adjust that phrase. So we might thrive on pressure, but once it really is stress, then generally the human brain and the human body don't thrive on stress.
We've had a great conversation there with Mark, talking about lots of elements relating to mental health. The conversation actually went on far longer than we expected it to. So what we've actually done is we've split it into two episodes. So we're going to finish this first episode here. Be sure to come back and listen to episode two, where we're going to continue the conversation and finish the conversation.
Hey everyone, really appreciate you tuning into this episode of Two Bald Guys Talking Safety. Please follow and subscribe to wherever you stream your favorite podcast. or visit us at evotix.com.
And if you want to see how follically challenged we really are, come and check us out on YouTube. If you've got value from the podcast, please go to Apple Podcasts. And in the review section of this podcast, if you could leave us a review or a rating, that would be great.
And as always, everyone, while you're going about your days and about your normal lives, stay safe out there and watch each other's back.